Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. I guess it's been about 10 days since I got back from Thailand, and my time there is still reverberating in my mind, and because I'm going to go every year, so on a certain level it's pretty ordinary, but it's also, this past time was many things happened that were quite special. The receiving of the Jokun title and the acknowledgement that came from that, or the people expressing their delight and appreciation. And of course it's still, you know, say the reminders keep coming for me. It's like John came this afternoon and brought a package from Thailand that was a Buddha image that was offered by Ajahn Jandi, just as a expression of mudita for my receiving a title. Because, I mean, he arranged for a whole ceremony to take place at his monastery with, I don't know, hundreds of people were there. And it's just a very beautiful image. Workmanship is quite special. But also the fact that Ajahn Jandi made a special effort to organize that and to present that on behalf of himself and his monastery, his lay community. So that's it's quite special. This being, I mean, one given the title, but then also given the people expressing their delight. And of course, I was there for 7 weeks altogether, so it sort of kept coming in various at various times, and sometimes just really took me by surprise. Just like when I every year I lead a retreat, about a 4-day retreat in a place called Ban Bun, which is a couple hours outside of Bangkok. And of course I've known many of those people for a long time. And at the end of the retreat, they it's quite normal at the end of a retreat to do a ceremony of asking forgiveness, but which is also a formal way of paying respects and, you know, expressing appreciation for a person's being. It's what we do quite regularly through the year, and people had written up a couple things of just their expressions of gratitude, and it took me. I was just sort of okay. End of retreat, and do the closing retreat ceremony, and have the pictures taken, and have the meal, and go on. But then it was, people spent time to really express in a very heartfelt way, and that was really moving on my part. So that kept coming in waves all the way through, and yeah, even still coming back and recollecting. So that, of course, much of it was their expression of gratitude for the things that I had given over the years. But, you know, what it brings up is a feeling of, a very, very strong feeling of gratitude and wanting to repay or wanting to act out of compassion for the benefit of those beings and all beings, really. And I think that's, in terms of the Buddhist teachings, that that sense of recollecting what we've been given in terms of these teachings. Because these teachings are so, they're liberating. They have the capacity to lead us to the end of suffering, and that's it's just the most amazing thing that we can come into contact with and can do, put our attention, effort, and energy towards. And the Buddha expresses that very beautifully at the end of his life, where he is being honored in many ways with the kind of celestial music and flowers from the heavens coming down, and people reverently being around him, and the Buddha saying, you know, what is an appropriate, you know, even those are wonderful expressions of gratitude or of appreciation, but they, what is the most appropriate thing is to practice Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma, and realizing that it's in that simple act of really giving ourselves to the practice of Dhamma, but doing it in a way that it really accords with Dhamma, because there are so many ways that we can, that are practiced and manifest, to recollect, well, how does the Buddha define practicing Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma? And there's many different places that he speaks of it, but the most common way that he expresses it is in viewing the sort of oneself and the world from a perspective of dispassion and relinquishment. That's if one's going to practice Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma, that inclining, encouraging both oneself as well as encouraging others to be committed to that sense of dispassion and relinquishment, because that's where the, in terms of practicing Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma, you realize that this, of course, there's that one sutta where the Buddha said the Buddha that the Dhamma, this Dhamma has this one flavor, in the same as that, say the in the same way that the ocean has the taste of salt, or what is salty, then say the Dhamma has the taste of liberation coming from relinquishment, or dispassion and relinquishment. So that to be reminding ourselves of this, and then that lifting up and encouraging, inclining the mind to that sense of dispassion is the word. Viraga is also has the meaning of fading away. It's a letting things fade away. It's not a matter of, say, like dispassion being something denying, annihilating, rejecting, but more just letting it fade away. Sort of, yeah, it's like, it's there. But you realize, no, it's bound up with complication and dukkha. It's bound up with suffering and dissatisfaction. So that letting it fade away. And that is an act of compassion, really. Also in the sense of just reflecting on, say, the time in Thailand with acknowledgement, recognition. And then besides sort of the whole Chao Kun thing, and then there was a receiving of an honorary doctorate at the major Buddhist university. I think, okay. But recollecting that the Buddha pointing to one of some of the strongest images that the Buddha gives is when he talks about the calamitous nature of gain, honor, and fame, in the sense that a painful thing is gain, honor, and fame. A disastrous thing is gain, honor, and fame. And of course, it's oftentimes it's what drives the world off, but it's to see that putting it in a perspective of that when it's believed in, picked up by the sense of self, or even just its by its very nature adds complications to one's life, that one has to be very cautious. And some of the images, like the, of course, there's that very famous image of the say the jackal that is running around, going from this bush over to that tree, over to that, and the Buddha saying, you see that jackal, it's agitated and restless because it has mange, and it doesn't matter where it goes, it's going to be uncomfortable. And he said, and that's the affliction of gain, honor, and fame. It's not something to, it's like seeking out gain, honor, and fame. It's like seeking out mange so you can scratch yourself all the time and run around restless and dissatisfied. Another image that the Buddha gives of gain, honor, and fame is of a turtle that is told to not go to a certain place because you'll get lanced or harpooned with him, and then he's sort of swimming around and looking for food in these places, and of course he can't resist going to that place, and then he says, what's the big deal? And he comes back to his friends and he said, where have you been? I said, well, I hope you didn't go to where that place was. So, well, it wasn't really a problem. And they sort of, well, what's this rope you've got and this harpoon in your back? and said, you may as well pack it in. You're going to be hauled out of here. And then the Buddha exhorts being cautious with gain, honor, and fame. Of course, my favorite one is the dung beetle, where a dung beetle it's quite common in Thailand. They're actually a delicacy, quite big, but they'll make their nest, make their eggs, put their eggs in, and then they roll these balls of dung. Sort of like a dung beetle, sort of being really proud of their, see how big my ball of dung is. And so it's a wonderful image. My ball of dung's bigger than yours. a monk, well, actually anybody, sort of stressing over, getting excited about gain, honor, and fame, because it's just more dung. So this reflection on relinquishment, dispassion and relinquishment, in contemplating how we contact the world, but then also it goes hand in hand with, say, like gratitude and compassion, because that, I say, just not engaging in the world or not engaging with anybody or anything is a, because that's one, you say, when the Buddha talks of the reasons for why we practice and engage in the practice of Dhamma is to bring benefit to ourselves and bring benefit to others. It's always in that context. Of course, the Buddha himself was a stellar example of that, having put forth effort in his own life for his own liberation, and then selflessly laying a foundation for, say, these teachings and training and the examples of Sangha to be transmitted for millennia, and comes back to the principles and the ways of practice that the Buddha himself laid down. That benefit is still coming forth. Similarly, I think of, say, of Ajahn Chah. I know he hasn't taught for over 30 years, and the benefit is still spreading, still being generated from his example and the ways of training that he exemplified. But it comes back to that sense of practicing Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma, so that we're putting things in their proper context, and then that benefit naturally extends out to others, and one reflects on the limitations of our existence, both on a physical as well as on a mental, emotional, psychological level. Those limitations are very, very real and painful. But they are also limitations which we can transcend, we can understand, we can realize a way of awakening to a truth within that. And as we practice, experience the fruits ourselves, and one wants to sort of solidify one's own experience of Dhamma, but then also to make sure that it does benefit others. And of course, an integral part of that say, practicing Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma is really reflecting on the, I say, on the non-self nature of this, our experience, what we can call, what we call the world, what we call ourselves, being, putting that front and center in our practice. And it's a sense of the teachings being for dispassion and relinquishment. So this quality of non-clinging. And there's a discourse where the Buddha sort of asks a rhetorical question. Is there anything that I could cling to that would not be blameworthy? And of course he answers, and yeah, there's nothing that we can cling to that would not be blameworthy. It would end up in some kind of complication, suffering. Because whatever we cling to has a very limited scope. It's bound by that which is impermanent, unsatisfactory, non-self. Because whatever we cling to, and the Buddha sort of said this, whatever we cling to, it doesn't go beyond form, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness, these five khandhas. And whatever we experience, however we experience it, whatever we can conceive of, it's all within the scope of these five khandhas. And these five khandhas are impossible to say to not be anything other than impermanent, unsatisfactory, not self. It's by their very nature. As they say, they sort of like the orderliness or the pervasiveness of the Dhamma, Dhamma Niyamata. It is consistent. And that it all ends up being, say, that which is, this is not mine. I am not this. This is not myself. Ne tang mamma, ne sohamasmi, na me so atati. Because we chant that in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, and it's such an important phrase to burrow into consciousness in terms of reflection. This is not mine. I am not this. This is not myself. So whatever, whether it's external, internal, refined or coarse, near or far, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, whether it's something that's grand and universal, whether it's something that is very mundane or minuscule, this is not mine. I am not this. This is not myself. And of course, the nature of the habit of mind is that we keep identifying. So that insight into the nature of identity is really what creates a shift. And actually the Buddha talks of it as being a change of lineage, because it's an insight into identity view that really opens up the doorway into the understanding of stream entry, and that is a change of lineage, a change of direction, where we shift from following the ways of the world and shift to a path of awakening. still work to do, but that's a huge shift. And so that to be able to lift up that investigation. And Buddha, in that same sutta, the Buddha talks of the, especially, he's addressing monastics and saying, you're alms mendicants and you live with an alms bowl. And in the world, that's a pejorative. You're a beggar, you're a homeless wanderer. But you've made that choice, quite clearly and quite rightly out of a dissatisfaction with the limitations of the world and a seeking of liberation. And so that to really fulfill that practicing Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma and living the Dhamma fully. Sometimes one practices and still is caught in wrong thinking, wrong perspectives, and it bounces back on one. It's painful. There's thoughts of sensuality, of gratification, of indulgence in pleasure. Thoughts of ill will, thoughts of harming. Those are typical, let's say, the micha sankapa, say, wrong thought, wrong mental formations. But then the Buddhas are into, but it's, he said, it's like having like a wood from a fire. Like not just an ordinary, it's like from a cremation pyre, which is, in India is already considered something very unclean, and sort of a piece of wood from a funeral pyre that burning at both ends and smeared with excrement in the middle. It doesn't matter where you pick it up, it burns you. It's unpleasant. That directing attention to dispassion, to fading away, to relinquishment, because that's where our place of actual happiness and well-being, as well as being able to repay the debt of gratitude that we have for all of the support. And as lay people, it isn't as if, well, there's, you're independent and you don't have any obligations to anybody. It's just as the reality is, as human beings, we're enmeshed with each other in causal processes, in becoming, in being. And how to establish ourselves in that quality of living the Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma, so that our actions of body, speech, and mind are what bring forth goodness, both for ourselves as well as for those around us. It might sound heavy or stark, but the reality is that they it's like that opportunity to focus on what is really, really beneficial, really, truly good, and the kind of well-being and joy that comes from that is a peace that arises. It's something that has the power to, say, transform ourselves and transform others around us. It's a gift to oneself. Some of these stock phrases in the in the suttas. They hold a key to really opening up to sort of all aspects of Dhamma, and to really prod one in the practice. Practicing Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma. It's a real key kind of phrase to be reflecting on. This is not mine. I am not this. This is not myself. It's another one that reflection, investigation, lifting up to give the possibilities for oneself. And you sort of that kind of amazing nature of the Dhamma starts to manifest. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.